aggressive than Mandingo. More shocking than Behind the Green Door. More erotic than Deep Throat.
Hi, this is Irv Katz, and welcome to Dial a Dork, the Cleveland radio home for nerds, geeks, and dorks. For the next hour, we'll take your calls about your crashed computer, your hung-up software, your level 17 paladin, or whatever geek-worthy topic you have in mind. Call us at 216-578-1300 and let the Dial a Dork community assist you. And now, here's your Cleveland dorks.
I just wanted to say that now I'm a nerd.
Y'all ready for this?
All right, welcome to another triumphant episode of Dial a Dork. I am your host, Irv Katz. I'm here in the studio with a full house today. We've got Dork Almighty Matt Minar.
I read slash dot.
Indeed, we all do. We've got no nickname having Russ Miller.
Woot.
We got Dewey the Answer Man, Drew Ivan.
Hello, Cleveland.
Hello, indeed. And we've got the most welcome return of Yoko the Architect in the booth, ready to answer the phones and give us the finger. And we've got Matt working the board. Thank you very much, kind sir. And
Let's do the business.
Let's do the business indeed. Give us a call. 216-578-1300. 578-1300. Call us or email us at dorks at dialadork.com.
Hyphenated.
Yeah. dial-a-dork.com. And today's show, the theme of today's show is this is the t-shirt giveaway spectacular.
you mean spectorcular?
Spectorcular. Dorktacular.
Dorktacular.
Normally, these t-shirts have a retail value of $10.
Dorkulous.
Whee! however, of 10 dorkles. And basically, what we're going to do today is anybody who calls and tells us either why you refuse to try Linux or an open source piece of software, or anybody who calls and tells us why they switched from Windows to Linux or switched from some sort of proprietary software to an open source software. If you tell us your tale of either why you switched or why you won't switch, you get a free t-shirt, everyone. Or, of course, if you... Basically, according to Yoko the Architect, if you make some sort of contact with the show in any way, shape, or form, you get a t-shirt. But I think that's way too shameless. So I want to hear your tale of, oh my God. Okay, what's the address on that, dude?
Well, if you just go to the front page, we've linked it off the bios. But what Irv is referring to is finally Matt, the Dork Almighty, has posted a bio page.
Oh, my God.
On the Dial a Dork site.
If you go to dialadork.com, hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com, and scroll all the way to the bottom, you'll see a horizontal row of, as opposed to a vertical
usual
row.
Usual suspects.
A row of names of the usual suspects who appear in the show, and a couple of them are links. One is to my spectacular bio and my special story of using a pet computer. But apparently we've got a new one. A new one for Dork Almighty, Matt Minar.
Yeah, so if anybody's looking to see what the Dork Almighty looks like, he's right out there. Ladies, be careful.
Yeehaw!
What year was that from?
Last
week, right?
Eighth grade? That'd be 1986, 85.
Matt is 14 right now.
So look, no one's...
We're going back in time.
No one's going to hold you personally responsible for the way you looked when you were... What was that, 13, 14 years old?
Something like that.
Well, you know, at the bar, we were really chowing down on our dorkdom from our youth. It was pretty fun.
No, I mean, there's no doubt about it. I mean, but the thing about it is that very little of the way that I looked at that age was really left up to me. I mean, I didn't really pick out my own clothes necessarily. I wasn't really paying for them at that point.
Your older sister's dressed
My mommy was still brushing my hair.
Tell me that's not true.
It wasn't true. But,
Irv, I think that's pretty much true for all of us. My father cut my hair sometimes.
Well, if you go to that picture, that's not necessarily.
Yeah, it doesn't look like I had my hair cut at that point. But anyway, looks like we have an email. Pam in Parma writes in and says to the Dial of Dorks.
Okay, I'm scared to use software without tech support. I mean, who writes these programs? How can I trust them? Well, you know what? Don't answer the question, Matt. I know you're going into apoplectic shock. Don't answer the question yet. Let me just preface this by saying what we're going to be talking about for the bulk of today's show is replacements for Windows and other proprietary bloated commercial software, all the stuff you have to pay money for. We're going to talk about the alternatives and the open source alternatives. And this is a perfectly legitimate question, and I think this is one of the questions that most people, whether they're home users or making business decisions, have is how in the world am I going to get support for this program? Because everybody knows you can call my, it costs money, but you can call Microsoft anytime and they're going to do their best to help you. I've had very good experiences with their tech support when you pay them the $250 or whatever.
From a sort of office application level, I don't know if people know that they can, if they lose a Word doc, they're not going to call it Microsoft and try that out, I don't think. But this is actually an interesting question to me, is that, because it never would occur to me, who are these people writing it? Like, I am somewhat immersed in the free open source type society online. I see the posts when things come out. I know that there's a lot of people out there testing this before I get to it, so I know it's relatively stable. It's going to do what I need it to do because I'm not an edge user. But a lot of people that are, in the middle, they're not reading Slashdot every day. They don't know these things. So it's a good question.
I mean, why, how is a person going, Matt, explain, you. I know you have something to say about this. If I'm contemplating making the move from, say, Microsoft Office because I don't want to spend $300-$500 to go get it, why am I going to make the move to OpenOffice or Abby's Word or whatever?
I think the primary reasons are very simple. One, it's cost prohibitive to own Microsoft Office. Two, the alternatives, and there are a few, actually. I'll mention two right off the bat. One being OpenOffice, which you can find at openoffice.org, not .com, although I think they might own that as well. And the other one is StarOffice, which Sun Microsystems kind of put together, and OpenOffice is derived from, or StarOffice was derived from that. I forget exactly what the dynamic was there. The key there is that OpenOffice is able to read and save Microsoft Office formatted documents. So if somebody sends you a Word document with the .doc extension on it, this other program will open it, will display it, probably with about a 99% accuracy. And that's only because Microsoft has a closed file format. They had to do all kinds of hoop jumping just to make that work. And it will then be able to save it back as a Word document or into OpenOffice's own open format, which anybody can see the spec on and be able to interoperate with.
So, and now tell me, does the fact that Microsoft, I read that Microsoft is going to be moving Office to the
open format,
to the open XML format, that busts the door wide open for OpenOffice and products like that.
And it's for everything. All of a sudden, you don't have a proprietary closed format. You can, as a software developer, it is far easier to write programs that are able to read and write out an open file format, a la Microsoft's XML-based format that's coming out.
Yeah. So who do you call for tech support?
Well, that's answer the question, Claire.
So here's the primary response on that one. One, if you're a business and you are a small business looking to keep your costs low, this is a fantastic way to manage your IT costs. There are many IT companies out there, probably just as small as you are, who offer support for these kinds of programs. There are also alternatives. StarOffice, you can actually pay Sun Microsystems to support.
Kind of a big company.
A very big company. Some would say a fundamental company. You can pay them rather small fees for support incidents on StarOffice and that kind of thing. If you're deeper down into the whole open source movement and looking at actually running Linux, companies like Red Hat offer support for that as well to business and or individuals.
And
plus,
I think, yeah.
Of course, you can call, you know, Comm Group if you want, or the dorks.
I mean, that's true. You could always use some, you know, local purveyor of computer service. But
the point is that the
you
support
probably
is out
will not
there
need it
buy.
As well. I mean, you don't. Most people do not end up using. I would have to say Microsoft Office support.
I haven't ever.
That's
called
true.
And I would say on par are these open applications.
And I think the primary source for support for most of these things are the discussion forums and mailing lists that are associated with each one of these products. And I think that leads us into the YWOW, which is Yoko's website of the week, which is sourceforge.net.
That Ooh. Is a fantastic website.
Now, if you go to sourceforge.net, you pretty much can find the open source alternative to whatever program you want to use. And I mean, we're talking everything from, you know, everything from like Quicken or QuickBooks. You know, there are all kinds. There's like several open source alternatives for financial management. You know, there's GNU Cash. Now, is it GNU or GNU?
No GNU is good GNU with Gary GNU.
Well, I was just going to say the Great Space Coaster made
right.
it Gary GNU. But GNU. The question is it GNU? What does that stand for?
GNU is not Unix.
He's
It's recursive.
That's
it's
right.
terrible.
It's a recursive acronym.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, the point is that things like GNU Cache, or I guess there's a couple others, are perfectly adequate substitutes. They can take the downloaded statements from your bank. They can take all the electronic, money formats and things like that. And they're a great alternative to product. Now, granted, Microsoft Money and Intuit's Quicken are really pretty good, actually. They're pretty nice products, and they're not very expensive. They're really like $40 or $50, but, you know. Microsoft Money is like $50.
The things
I think. But this is free.
Yeah, the tax things are not quite there yet. It's something I would warn people because ongoing work every year for tax law.
Yeah, but there's alternatives for that as well. I mean, doing the filings online.
I did that for free this year.
And you can do that for free as well. You know, stick with that kind of format. But Irv's right. For some of the general things that we do, especially office applications, especially photo editing, the GIMP is a wonderful photo editing tool.
Well, I mean, how much is Photoshop? Hundreds and hundreds of dollars.
Here's what I would break it down is if you've got a program out there that'll do what you need it to do for $40, $50, $60, $70, use it. That's not too much to spend for the real value you get. If you got a program that's out there for $300, $400, $500, and you're really thinking about you'd rather steal it from work or something, think about the open source alternative.
Go to sourceforge.net and see if there's something you can just search. Mm-hmm. Search for search for the software name or search for what it does. For instance, it's really hard to justify sometimes spending upwards of more than $200 on Adobe Acrobat when you can get an open source PDF creation software for free. Okay, we've got and you can just go to sourceforge.net, search for PDF creator, I think would be a perfectly good search string, and you should get some results.
Hold on. One more comment on
this. Email, but go ahead.
PDF documents are wonderful things to send around the internet. Don't send Word documents around. Change it to PDF. And one of the best things about OpenOffice is that it includes native support for PDF creation.
No way.
So you can just save a document as PDF. It's fantastic.
Yeah.
I'm going to download it right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Email.
He doesn't even have a computer.
Glenn in Geauga wants to know, I'm the IT manager for a small law firm and would love to use open source. Do many businesses make the move successfully?
Well, you hear, news articles all the time about cities and counties and
German places.
Cities, places all over the world that are just making the wholesale shift to open source alternatives, much less places like India and Brazil, who have pretty much shot down the Microsoft monopoly and said, we will be using open source alternatives in every public or government institution across the country.
Was it Indonesia recently?
But you know what?
Settled with Microsoft for $1 per copy of pirated Windows. Microsoft was like, it was so bad, it was so ridiculous that Microsoft took what they could get.
But just to go back to this question, though, you know what? It's going to be political because you're not in India. You're not in Germany. It's going to be your company. I guess a guy in a law firm is going to have a real hard time pushing his agenda on law partners.
Well, I don't think that's true at all. I think that there's a certain size of a company that is appropriate for this kind of thing. It does take a certain mind shift. Get yourself out of this mentality of paying, you know, Microsoft loads of cash.
But from
for this.
My point of view, like the user's point of view, they have to almost always someone who's low on computer literacy has to come in and learn their application anyway to do what they need to do to get their job done, and it really is arbitrary. There's people out there using applications from the 80s and 90s just because that's what they learned. Absolutely. And they know how to use it. It's not that great of a thing. Yeah. So don't be so scared about the new.
You'll get tons of geek cred by using open source.
Yeah, who knows?
Yeah, no doubt.
I mean, think about the financial benefit as well. You know, the month that it takes to get your workforce over the initial learning curve with the open source software, if it even takes that long, is worth it in yearly renewal and, you know, fees payable to Microsoft for the next update.
Yeah, and it's
for
hardly
the next operating system update.
Hardly
for
smooth with the Microsoft stuff. That's the FUD right there.
I would certainly
everything's
recommend
easy with
Would you care to define FUD for our audience?
The fear, uncertainty, and doubt. It's a great marketing tactic, but it's not necessarily real.
Yeah. Right. You know, and I think a lot of businesses, you know, make a successful combination of open source software and proprietary software, and slowly but surely make the move. You know, so Glenn, if you're listening, the point is that, yes, many businesses make the move successfully. I would suggest you do it incrementally.
Absolutely.
Make the move bit by bit, you know, and slowly but surely show all your users and the organization that the open source products are just as effective, and the cost savings are immense, and
it'll be easy to build consensus among the partners and then move everything forward.
I think we hear the music.
I don't.
You don't hear the music? All right, we're going to come back in a minute. We'll continue this subject. We've got some other cool things to talk about, such as poker-playing robots. And we just want to, you know, put out our congratulations to Michael Jackson there for getting off. All right, we'll be back.
I can't believe you just said that.
Hi, I'm nobody in particular, and I'd like to ask you a question. Are you dissatisfied with your current IT service provider? And by that I mean, is your computer guy a jerk? Are you paying $100 an hour, $125 or more for IT service? In other words, is your computer guy ripping you off? Does your computer guy leave more problems than he fixes? Essentially, does he know what the heck he's doing? Call the Comm Group today and get the level of service you desire at the price you deserve, with in-home rates as low as $50 an hour and in-office rates as low as $75. That's KOMM Group at 216-556-0141. That's 216-556-0141 or kommgroup.com. Don't be scared. Call the Comm Group.
Boy, I love wrestling.
Then you should play IWA.
What's the IWA?
The Imaginary Wrestling Association. It's the greatest fun since wrestling itself. You create a wrestler, manage his career, and compete against other wrestlers from around the world for championship titles and prizes. The IWA lets you trash talk and do sneak attacks. They even have specialty matches.
Well, that sounds great. How do I get started?
Go to playiwa.com. You could be
the new world champion.
Cleveland Public Theater and Tidal Wave Theater present Stone Cold Dead Serious, the honest, funny, surreal story of the Ledbetters, a clan of dropouts, junkies, and QVC addicts. You know, just your average dysfunctional family. Only their teenage son can save them from themselves by winning $1 million playing a real-life version of a computer game, or at least, he'll battle to the death trying. Written by America's next great playwright, Adam Rapp, Stone Cold Dead Serious is another high-octane ride from CPT and Tidal Wave Theater, co-producers of last year's Wait and Charge. Stone Cold Dead Serious opens Friday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. and runs through June 18th. Tickets are $15 and discounts are available. Call the box office at 216-631-2727 or just go to cptonline.org and get serious about video games.
When you went to Adams, you might have been called a spaz.
or a dork or a geek.
We know you're not on the phone with a girl, so call us instead at 216-578-1300. And now, back to Dial a Dork.
All right, we're back on the air here. Dial a Dork. Give us a call, 216-578-1300, or email us at dorks at dialadork.com. That's hyphenated dial-a-dork.com. And just remember, give us a call. Yo, 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 people living in Cleveland, give us a call and tell us about your open source experience or your lack thereof or unwillingness to try. We want to hear from you. We want to hear your story. We want to talk to you about it. And we'll give you a dang T-shirt if you friggin' call.
Just say it. Just,
no, I'm not saying. I know no one's listening, but, you know. Okay, we got an email.
578-13.
We've got an email here, not related to open source, but,
I don't know about that.
Well, that's true. That's true. My computer is telling me.
Let's break it down.
My computer is telling me that my virus protection is out of date. Do I have to pay for an updated version? Well, that's a very, very good question. I suppose it all depends on what virus protection you're using.
Well, to bring this back to our earlier conversation, you can run an open source alternative of virus protection called ClamAV.
That's what
Clam?
I use.
Clam?
Clam.
You really use
like
it?
I really use it.
Is it a crustacean?
Like bearded clam?
It's a bivalve.
It's a bivalve. That's right. Yeah. Way to go, Dewey the Answer Man.
Bivalve, indeed.
Are clams kosher?
No, shellfish is kosher.
Okay.
You're so shellfish.
Why not? I mean, it's natural. Comes from the sea.
It's not about naturalistic. Clean.
Yeah.
It's a filter feeder. It eats poop.
It's a filthy animal. It roots.
And I think clams have a cloven hoof. I don't really know how it goes. Look, the point is that there are products. Are you saying that ClamAV runs on Windows?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so you could go get ClamAV. There's another one that I really, really like, which is called AVG.
Really?
You go to GRI Soft, you can look for their AVG free edition, which is free for home use, and it's really, really effective. It's very good. Every place I've installed it, it does an extremely good job. It's always updating itself automatically, and it does a terrific job, catches everything, checks email going in and out.
Here's a question.
It's not open source, but it's free. Totally
free.
Free
as in beer.
Free as in beer.
I just want to throw out that ClamAV does not do real-time scanning, or it didn't last time I looked into it.
It still doesn't. You have to kick off the scan yourself.
Yes, yeah, so you have to go check your
Which
own
is stuff well, for when you need opinion. To.
AVG free is as full function a virus scanner as you're ever going to want. It even sends out a nice little bumper sticker on your email that says, "This email certified."
Oh, yeah, I get that all the time.
Yeah, you know, this outgoing mail certified. Well, you know, I find it reassuring. Okay, look, we got a caller on line one, clearly interested in a Dial a Dork T-shirt, which ultra stylish, and it's a brown stylings with white design. Dave, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, man. What's going on?
How are you, Dave?
I'm moderately comfortable, man.
Oh, that's terrific. You make a good living, then?
Are you chafing?
Actually, I'm an IT guy who is unemployed, and I make a horrible living.
Oh, no.
Disemployed.
Yeah, I'm disemployed, man.
Well, that's a bummer, dude.
Do you live in the Cleveland area?
Yeah, I do, man.
Well, that's not terribly surprising. The IT market here is a little weak compared nationally, I think.
Yeah, it's very, very slim pickings, man.
What's your area of expertise?
A little bit of everything except web design, man. I mean, man, I used to teach, so, you know, I got some teaching experience as far as A-plus goes, you know, networking, all the way back to the good old NT4 days, man. So
wow.
Everything except websites and Unix.
Well, I mean, could you administer a website as opposed to design one? Like, make sure one stayed up and running?
I suppose so, man. I mean, I'm kind of weak in that area. It's something I'd have to brush up on. You know, if a client really wanted that, you know, that's not a problem.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too hard to pick up on, to be honest with you.
Really?
No, I mean, well, you know, if you've done everything else, it's pretty much right in line with everything else you probably already know how to do.
Really? So like, if I'm going back to, like, IIS4 and stuff like that, I mean, am I way off or close or?
Oh, you're on 6 now, right? Is that?
It's IIS 6 now.
Maybe even 6. Seven. No, 6 is correct. And yes, the administration consoles have changed a little bit, but the fundamentals are still the same.
Okay, all right, that's good to know.
Well, what can you tell us about open source? What's your story?
I like a lot of the open source that I've come across, like OpenOffice. I mean, it's great. I mean, I used to do some part-time work in a computer store, and for licensing purposes, we went away from throwing on Office. We went to OpenOffice for customers, and, you know, it's easy to install. It's great, but customers are like, what do I do with this? You know, they don't know what it is, but as far as, like, open source goes on a Unix platform, I think the learning curve is a little bit too high for the average person. Like, what's a mount point? You know what I'm saying? But other than that, I mean, it's great, but the learning curve is a little bit steep, you know?
Well, yeah, I could see that. I mean, it would be really, really traumatic, I think, to take the average computer user sitting in their cubicle and asking them to try to utilize some sort of command line interface. I think that would be very, very difficult. But do you have a particular distribution of Linux that you prefer, or a particular windowed environment that you like?
I've done a lot of stuff like virtual PC, so, you know, a lot of the distributions I've had maybe ran on top of Windows or something like that, just to get around that whole mount point thing and everything.
I see.
Even Nopix.
Cygwin, probably.
You know what's real good is Nopix. You know, I think it's like a live CD.
Yeah,
I
mean, you can just throw in a CD and play around with the actual system without messing up your base system.
Exactly right. That's pretty cool.
So that's a good way to, I think, get familiar with Linux, is to use a CD boot system like Nopix, and because whatever changes you make aren't going to stay.
Hey, guys, and two more things.
Sure.
Even better than that, there's something called DSL, Damn Small Linux. It's like a 50 meg download. I mean, you can burn an ISO image of that and boot up to a live Linux CD on that.
I wonder if you could boot that from, like, a USB key.
Yes, you can. Yeah. You can boot up off of a USB thumb drive, zip disk, anything that'll hold 50 megs or more.
Wow.
Sweet.
Yeah, I mean...
Yeah, there's a lot of options out there, absolutely.
Right, it's real good for data recovery, disaster recovery, all that good stuff, which is another specialty of mine, disaster recovery, data recovery.
Oh, sweet.
Right on.
Hey, one more thing.
Yeah.
I was trying to evaluate the security of my wireless network, right?
Mm-hmm.
And in doing so, trying to get around the web encryption and things like that just to see how strong my own wireless network was.
Yeah.
I come to find out that a lot of the tools out there are Unix-based, and that's when I find out this stuff is complicated, man. I mean, like the tools are out there, you know, AirSnort, stuff like that. you're laughing because you know what I'm talking about. But
I'm laughing because I like the name.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, there's stuff out there like AirSnort and Etherpeak and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But most of the stuff is all like Unix-based, and I mean, that's like...
Yeah, and a lot of that war-driving type stuff that's out there to hunt down and check out and
right.
Perhaps test and probe wireless networks is Linux-based.
And I'm surprised you didn't mention Kismet and Aircrack.
Well, I just heard about Kismet this past Friday. I didn't download it yet, but is that a Windows-based or Unix, or what is it?
As far as I know, they don't have a Windows port, but it is Unix-based.
Because a lot of that wireless stuff is so driver-dependent, mm-hmm. It's all still in the Linux world at this point.
Okay.
Well, I got a question for you, Dave.
Sure.
What did you discover about your wireless network in terms of its... strength, if you will. Were you able to bust in?
I wasn't able to bust in, but there are a lot of successful reports of other people being able to evaluate their own wireless networks.
What kind of hardware are you using?
What is it? I think it's an SMC wireless adapter.
So just your basic kind of basic end user type.
Yeah, basic end user stuff with 128-bit encryption.
But so you're saying the average and so this is something that I think all our listeners should pay attention to if you're contemplating using wireless at your home or at your business, is that it really takes a concerted effort and someone who really knows what they're doing to bust into your network, chances are.
It really takes an enthusiastic
There's plenty of people who know what they're doing.
Yeah,
there's plenty of 14-year-olds who will spend a lot of time on it.
Yeah, the average person's not going to do it. This is an enthusiastic person who's really going at it. And nowadays, I mean, they're really beefing up the security with WPA and WPA2. So
yeah, you want to go with those for sure.
Yeah, so, you know, I'd say in about 2 or 3 more years, nobody's going to be using WEP anyway. So.
Amen.
Right,
to that.
Right, right. And I tell some of my clients that that it's true that wireless and things like that are technically vulnerable, but chances are most of the people who are spending time breaking into those things don't live in Cleveland.
Right. if you ask me, I'm an old-fashioned guy. I prefer wires over wireless any day.
There you go. Yeah. There you go.
Personal preference.
All right. Well, excellent work, Dave. Thank you so much for calling.
All right.
Hey, stay on the line because Yoko got to get your at least your email address so we can send you a t-shirt.
Okay, sounds cool, man.
All right, great, man. Thanks a lot, dude. Call anytime.
Thanks for listening.
All right, great. Well, that was.
Hey, I do have one point to make about it. It was a little worried about mount points in Linux. Have you noticed that Windows these days will do mount points for drives?
Yeah, it does.
You can pick any place in your file structure now to drop in a new disk.
Right. I think that...
What do you mean by that?
Well, hold on. We'll talk about that in a second. Specifically about some of the details of working with Linux and installing it,
right,
and that kind of thing.
Oh, there's lots of details. This is just one.
Yeah, it's just one of them. And a concerted effort has been made in, I'd say, the past 3 or 4 years, maybe? Maybe not quite that long, to improve the user experience when you're installing this kind of thing so that you really don't have to understand that there's a lot of automatic configuration tools that generally do the right thing. If you want, the whole concept is if you want to be able to get into the nitty-gritty and make all the decisions yourself, you can. They don't purposely hide anything from you. They give you the choice.
Right. They make the install path easier. Mount points, back to that, is it's where you're going to stick a drive. Back in the DOS days, Bill decided the way to do it was, if you stick a new drive in the system, we're going to make a brand new, call it the root of the tree, and we're going to call it C or D or E or wherever the base of that particular drive will be. Unix and Linux has always kind of given you more options in that sense. You can drop a brand new drive in arbitrarily into that file system. So if you already have C:\monkey. You can put it under C:\monkey/peanuts.
And make that drive D?
And your drive D is there. There is no more drive D. It's just if you go to that particular directory, as it were.
You move to a different physical drive.
You move to a different drive.
Oh, I see. Right. Oh, cool.
They abstract the path that you are currently in from the actual physical media.
Okay, cool. That's really exciting and hilarious. And I want to just recursively work our way back to the thing that got us off on this tangent, which was
open source.
This woman asking about, does she have to pay for renewing her virus definitions? Oh. And the point of that is that if you're using something like Norton or McAfee, the answer is yes. Well, you have to pay because they give you a year or whatever when you buy the software. However, if you want to use something like Clam AV
but
or AVG-free, you don't have to pay.
On any given month that pops up, you're probably still under your year service, most likely.
You know what? I never really got much of an advanced warning. It's more like...
It's a week.
I think their business model is more like, let's have it run out all of the sudden one day, and then they go into a panic and spend the $30.
Depending on which version
Those
of Norton
bastards.
You had, Norton Antivirus 2003, I believe, tells you when you're going to expire every time you start it up to do a live update if you don't have that set automatically.
Sweet.
Now,
I want to talk about these poker bots. Damn it.
Are those open source?
Poker bots.
Are they open source? Not really, no, because I think these are things designed to... I mean, was Deep Blue open source? Probably not.
Well, I understand where you're going with
that.
That the poker bot could be compared to something as beautiful as Deep Blue.
All right. Beautiful. As Deep Blue did have a lovely rack. Mount-based system.
Oh, it sure did.
Rack-mounted servers.
We're talking all kinds of...
Just a huge
D
rack.
D-drives.
D-drives. Okay.
Double D-drives?
Double D-drives. Here's the thing. As you may or may not know, a computer program called Deep Blue beat... Kasparov?
I
think it was Garry Kasparov. Beat Garry Kasparov in like 1997 or 87 or 97 or something like that.
Was
my pre-show preparation. But I think in 1997, beat the greatest chess player arguably ever, and that was a pretty big day for humans and for machines. I mean, it was pretty amazing accomplishment. The computer itself weighed over a ton.
I, for one, Welcome.
And then they said, well, but a computer will never be able to win at, say, backgammon. But as it turns out, computers got so good at playing backgammon that they've actually discovered new strategies for playing backgammon that have been adopted by all the world's great players, if you can believe that. Now they've got programs that are playing poker. They are actually going to the sites like Poker Stars, Party Poker, and everything else, playing. You know, these people are setting up bots to play in these little low-stakes tables. They go to bed, they wake up in the morning, and each one of them's won 20, 30, 40 bucks, you know, and they've made a few hundred dollars. But they've got all these different ones playing. However, there are all kinds of sophisticated ways for noticing that you've got a bot playing, such as it makes its decisions in about 1 second every time, and it plays for 47 hours straight.
What is a bot? So everybody knows it's.
Well, in my mind, it's like it's not an actual little, like, you know, Sony Aibo little thing that barks or something. It's a machine. It's a little program that it's a program. And
don't yell.
All right, but anyway, the point is that they've decided that, you know, instead of, and this is, I think, very wonderful and proactive, they are, instead of, you know, demonizing the people who are creating these poker bots, okay, they instead have set up a $100,000 tournament to be held in Vegas, I believe, between to see who can have the who's going to have the winning bot.
When
they're all
going to
play each other. Let's see. The LA Times reported that a poker tournament will be held where engineers will be able to pit their automatic poker playing programs against each other, like a World Series of Poker type of thing, with a $100,000 cash prize.
It's like BattleBots with cards.
You know what?
Yeah, exactly.
I would love for our Dial-A-Dork community, if there's any hot programmers out there, to, you know, get together and put something like this in and
then share their winnings with us
and then win.
That would be awesome.
You know, and we'll
But I think this
fantastic.
Is going to be the quite opposite of open source, because this is going to be trade secret.
Well, there's
type
already
stuff.
A pretty big one in Toronto, University of Toronto, I think, in Canada. That, I mean, I don't know if they publish the source exactly, but it's an academic endeavor at the university, and there's a lot of people studying that kind of thing. It's game theory, it's programming.
It's actually very sophisticated.
All kinds of fun.
Because the hard part is not the statistical analysis. That's something that computers do exceedingly well.
It's the gameplay,
it's the bluffing, that kind of thing. You know what, and we're going to be cutting to a break real quick, but we do have an email. Wendy, and we've got Emma online, so hang on, Emma. We'll get to you when we come back from the break, but we've got an email from Wendy in Westlake. She says, is open source program training available, or do I need to start dating a dork?
I
would say do both, personally, because A, you probably need the training, and the dorks need the date,
That's right.
To be perfectly honest.
Everybody out there is watching that Beauty and the Geek, right?
Yeah. No, nobody's watching.
No, I don't think.
Are there dummies books for open source programs?
Are there a dummies book for dating?
Yes.
Look, let's put it this way. It's you know, market forces would predict that if there aren't training programs for open source programs now, there soon will be, because people are making the move. But there's got to be. I mean, there's definitely Linux training out there. There's no question about that.
There's more material available online as browsable web pages than there is in, you know.
So even the documentation is open.
You know, tree bark format.
Documentation.
Tommies.
Probably in the open source docbook format.
Yeah. In fact, you could go to opendocument.com.
But Wendy, I would say train thyself. If there's a particular program you wish to learn how to use, pursue it. Go to its homepage. Find its documentation. Find its mailing list. Find its discussion forum. Its how-tos. All that kind of stuff. And try it yourself. Try to see what you can find out on your own. That is how most of the people in the open source community learn anything, is they teach themselves.
Would you stop denying a dork a date here?
Okay.
And go date a dork.
There you go.
And frankly, do more than that.
They've studied everything.
Okay, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm nobody in particular, and I'd like to ask you a question. Are you dissatisfied with your current IT service provider? And by that I mean, is your computer guy a jerk? Are you paying $100 an hour, $125 or more for IT service? In other words, is your computer guy ripping you off? Does your computer guy leave more problems than he fixes? Essentially, does he know what the heck he's doing? Call the Comm Group today and get the level of service you desire at the price you deserve. with in-home rates as low as $50 an hour and in-office rates as low as $75. That's KOMM Group at 216-556-0141. That's 216-556-0141 or kommgroup.com. Don't be scared. Call the Comm Group.
Boy, I love wrestling.
Then you should play IWA.
What's the IWA?
The Imaginary Wrestling Association. It's the greatest fun since wrestling itself. You create a wrestler, manage his career, and compete against other wrestlers from around the world for championship titles and prizes. The IWA lets you trash talk and do sneak attacks. They even have specialty matches.
Well, that sounds great. How do I get started?
Go to playiwa.com. You could be
the new club champion.
Cleveland Public Theater and Tidal Wave Theater present Stone Cold Dead Serious, the honest, funny, surreal story of the Ledbetters, a clan of dropouts, junkies, and QVC addicts. You know, just your average dysfunctional family. Only their teenage son can save them from themselves by winning $1 million playing a real-life version of a computer game, or at least, he'll battle to the death trying. Written by America's next great playwright, Adam Rapp, Stone Cold Dead Serious is another high-octane ride from CPT and Tidal Wave Theater, co-producers of last year's Wait and Charge. Stone Cold Dead Serious opens Friday, June 3rd at 8 p.m. and runs through June 18th. Tickets are $15 and discounts are available. Call the box office at 216-631-2727 or just go to cptonline.org and get serious about video games.
Why do you think you're a dork? I don't think you're a dork.
We know you're not on the phone with a girl, so call us instead at 216-578-1300. And now, back to Dial-A-Dork.
And we're back on the air. And I just want to remind everyone that this weekend is your last chance, Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, to go see Stone Cold Dead Serious at the James Levin Theater on 6415 Detroit Avenue. Go to cptonline.org and find out more information. Go down there. It's a great show. $10 or $15
really
to get
shoe.
In. A really great shoe. So I suggest everyone go down there and see our kick-ass ad in the program, baby. And okay.
Can you say ass? Can you say damn small Linux?
I don't know. Maybe I shouldn't have. Okay, we've got a caller on line one. Emma, how are you, Emma?
Good.
And what seems to be your trouble, Emma?
Well, say there's like a normal like thing that's good for your computer, like a download, like Windows Media or Microsoft or a game.
Okay.
And it's good. And say you try to download it, and you go through the process and everything, and then it doesn't work, and then you want to try it again. And I want to know why it wouldn't work.
Well, so do I. All right, now, let me ask you, I think you need to be more specific in terms of what it was you were downloading. Do you remember what it was in particular that didn't work?
I tried to download this, like, specific software for it, so I'd be able to... I can't say this word. So I'll be able to play a game, and it didn't want to work. I don't remember the specific software.
Okay.
But I went through the process multiple times, and it still said there was an error, and I wasn't able to download it.
You know what? You know what could easily be happening is that whatever site is hosting the particular file you're trying to download is having problems. And if that site is having problems and consistently losing its internet connection or dropping its internet connection, this happens at times, especially with larger downloads. You can easily have your download cut off right in the middle, and then you have to start over from scratch, or whatever you do download got slightly corrupted and isn't going to run right when you try to launch it. But this I'm glad you brought this up, because there are a number of open source programs called download managers, which what they do is they kind of protect your download from crashing in the middle. It downloads part of the program, and if for some reason you get cut off, you're able to resume the download where you left off. And it's kind of nice that way. You know, supposedly things like Internet Explorer and what have you maintain a cache that should let you do that anyway, but they rarely work. So that's something else you could consider is maybe go to sourceforge.net or something like that and look up a download manager. Maybe try to get something like that. Or I think there's a really nice one that's not open source, but it's called Free Download Manager. And that is a pretty helpful one.
Hey, Emma. Is the file finishing downloading and then it's giving you the error, or is it halfway through?
Well, I finished the process, and then when I'm fully finished, it says there's an error.
Are you, like, clicking in a dialog that says next and all this junk like that?
I don't really remember. Right.
Okay. There's a few different things that could be happening there, too. And I just wanted to make sure where it was in the process. You keep on saying that. Could you clarify for me what the process is so I can understand?
Okay. There's all this thing, like, this window pops up. You have to press run or install. And you get to press it, like, twice because it pops up twice. And then it goes through this other thing of reading, and then you agree. And then it comes to this, okay, you fully installed, and then you click next, and then it says, sorry, there's an error, you're not able to download it at this time, and things like that.
Okay, it sounds to me like actually you're downloading the program from the website just fine. It's that when you're installing it, the installer is detecting a condition in your computer that it's not compatible with the program, and it's then giving you that error. Because what's happening is when you get to all those little screens where it says click next or I agree or you have a couple of choices there, when it gets to the done with that, when all those dialogues are done, the installer is supposed to start actually copying files and configuring your computer so that the program will run. If it detects any problem or any requirement there that the program needs that your computer isn't giving it, then it's going to it can do a couple of different things. One of them is to give you an intelligible answer and say, oh, I'm sorry, I can't install this. The other option is for it to give you some kind of generic error message that says, oh, a problem occurred, and then it just quits. And I suspect that's what's happening to you.
Oh, okay.
If that's the case, one of the things that you need to try to double check is, does the program run on your specific type of computer, i.e. does it run on your type of Windows operating system? And if it doesn't, you need to try to find a version that does. Especially with Microsoft's fixes to Windows, some older programs and some, what would you say, like just older programs don't run it quite as well,
right,
after Service Pack 2.
Well, but like in Windows XP, they do have the compatibility mode, but that's a whole can of worms. Emma, what do you say we give you a t-shirt anyway?
Cool.
Okay. Well, look, stay on the line, and Yoko will get your at least your email address or your mailing address, and we'll send you out a t-shirt for calling.
Cool.
Well, thank you so much, and good luck, okay? And if you run into the same problem again, you can email dorks@dialadork.com, and that's hyphenated, dial-a-dork.com. Email us with the exact name of the program or where you got it from or whatever, and we'll try to help you. There's got to be a way.
Yeah, we can certainly at least look at the program that you're trying to download and figure out if there's another version and maybe point you to that one.
And see if it's fun to play.
That's true. All right? Okay, good. It's really a shame when the children have to suffer. Breaks my heart.
They can call us?
Think of the children.
Yeah. And speaking of children, I think we can all be pleased that the justice system in California works as designed.
Do we need to talk about this?
Well, I'm just going to say that I'm going to wait to commit my crime spree until I get to California.
Well, remember that Drew Kurz predicted this back at Nauticon.
You know what? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. He said that the guys over at Smoking Gun said that the evidence that was being put forth by the prosecution team was laughable at best, and that Jackson was going to be exonerated completely, and that is exactly what happened today. So kudos to Drew Curtis, who predicted that live at Nauticon.
If you downloaded that interview from our website, you would have already known the outcome months ago.
Had FARC approved any of the links we submitted to it, the whole nation would know how much of a genius Drew Curtis is, but now he'll just have to exist in obscurity some more.
Well, we all make our choices.
Yeah, well, tough break, Drew. Tough break.
Here we are trying to promote Drew and Jacko, and somehow it doesn't happen.
Yeah, and it's unbelievable. But I just want to say that, you know, kudos again to another California jury that saw, you know, just an innocent, pure-hearted Peter Pan-like guy, and let him go back to Neverland Ranch, a free man.
Can you be done?
Yeah, I'm done with
that. Let's move on. This is not open source.
Can we please talk about chicks in Aruba?
Chicks in Aruba? Oh, we don't want to talk about
runaway
that.
Runaway brides,
we
don't anything else.
That's a terrible thing that happened down there in Aruba. So we gotta pick. We gotta go up onto a happy.
To Key Largo, Montego, baby.
We are flashing back to the 80s here. This is awesome.
This is disgusting.
To go look at Matt in the 80s.
Well, here, I'd like to take the last couple of minutes maybe to discuss online security.
E-commerce is really a pressing topic.
You know what? Me. Actually, I have something salient here. I was communicating with Amitai, our dork in Europe erstwhile dork. He's been using internet cafes and the like over there to communicate with us via email and such. And there was an article maybe off of Slashdot today that said that some internet cafes are starting to install key logging utilities.
Oh, yes.
And that is certainly, it was very disturbing because...
Maybe we should save that for next week when we could do a whole show about the key logging and things to prevent your children from accessing things at, like, say, a .xxx website.
See, key logging doesn't prevent anything.
Well, it doesn't prevent anything, but it lets you know that they've done it.
Well, yeah, exactly.
And you said you had a gripe?
Oh, yeah. Cell phones, man. What the heck? All right.
I know
they
suck.
There is a limit to the smallness that cell phones can get. I am sorry. My fingers are not that of a 10-year-old. They don't fit on the keys of these tiny little cell phones, and they cram all of this functionality, cameras and, movies and something or other onto these cell phones, and they cram all these buttons on this little itty-bitty tiny interface, and you go try to hit one button, you end up hitting another one, and you're talking to your mom. That sucks. It's a heck in a handbag. I'm trying to clean up my personality,
man.
Here.
Cursomatic 9000 over there. double hockey sticks.
Hades and soccer shorts.
It just irritates the heck out of me. I mean, you know, I love miniaturizing technology, but there's a limit here. You know, technology needs to be user appropriate. You don't need to make a cell phone for a 10-year-old here. Make it for a man's hands, please.
Well, if your pants were looser, you could put in larger cell
phones. Are you suggesting that Swanson should make a cell phone model for you? Like the Hungry Man cell
phone? Yeah, I want
a
Hungry Man cell phone.
Or like an Encore, you know.
I want something with big buttons on it.
Are you sure about that?
Well, bigger than they are now.
You sure about that?
I want one button.
You sure about that?
One button that I have to scroll through the entire alphabet and the digits with.
Just press it like 22 times to get like a W or something.
That's right. That's really convenient for me. I can't text message at all.
How about a cell phone that is completely and 100% voice controlled?
They have everything.
Well,
they have those
show
now.
Calendar.
They make appointments. But they're also like they've just come out. June 24th. Top of the line models. You got to pay $100 million for it.
$100 million.
100 million pesos.
That's a 100 million lira. I could go for
exactly.
Hey. Tune in next week, same bad time, same bad station.
Talk about e-commerce.
Well, we'll try to talk about e-commerce security, but we'll probably wind up yammering on endlessly about something else, some other.
Go get your open source software on.
Yeah. Why don't you go try some open source software and give us a call next week and tell us how it went. Give us some recommendations. Go try GNU Cache or Myth TV or something.
iPodder,
anything. All right. We love you, Cleveland. Barely this has been Dial a Dork. We'll see you next week.
You get all those pimps together. It was live.